grenadier du 3e de ligne 1830.
In 1931, during the occupation of Algeria by France, a bard called Hanani came up with a song called Sahab el Baroud, which means People of the Powder. It was made during the celebration of the 100 years of colonization of Algeria by France. This poem, this song, is not just a denunciation of the established order of colonization. It is a call to arm, a call to popular consciousness. The companions of the powder, the people of the powder and rifle, they carry the powder and have lit the fuel.
This is also probably why it's easier for white academics to publish and make tenure writing about colonization. The archives don't haunt them, the trauma doesn't live in their bones, and they don't have to put the books down to breathe. Leilani Sabzalian.
First off, I don't like you. I speak and refer to the term us and them, because there is no objectivity when people are oppressed and suffering. I refuse the term post-colonialism, as it leaves space for the thought that colonialism is over, as if France, and many other, is still not a colonial empire. They are using economics, globalization, cultural imperialism, and conditional aid to influence their former colonies, instead of the previous colonial methods of direct military control, aka imperialism, or indirect political control via hegemony. At the time I am writing this, in France, colonization is being raised as a republican value with a nationalist ideology. The national tale is dominating the historical and social discourse, to the detriment of a knowledge linked to colonization and slavery which struggles to be heard. The action of the ideological apparatuses of the state benefit from strong mediatic and political support. The violences created by this propaganda are the heirs of colonial ones, translated for the contemporary situation and for La Métropole. Unveiled ceremonies, counter-insurgency, torture have become legislation against the wearing of the Muslim veil and legislation for abusive police checks, raids by special brigades in popular neighborhoods, and police violence. Mathieu Rigouste, sociologist, speak of endocolonialism, a colonialism within the metropolitan territory. During my research, I quickly hit this infamous wall of white academia. Either there was no research, or it was from the colonizer's point of view. Looking for written references on Imaziren, Shawia people, or North African indigenous in general, I found that the selection was very slim compared to similar cultures. The same goes for the particularities of the storytelling and oral tradition in the area. In the space left, the most voices I found were white. I had to dig deeper into the void of academia to find indigenous sources or to look elsewhere. In National Geographic, which is one of the most widely read magazines of all time, for example, North Africa is a big absentee in an article about storytelling and cultural traditions. Over centuries, white academia has specialized in the invisibilization of minorities, yet managing to pass as an ally while exploiting us minorities at the same time. As Amandine Gay puts it, this white academia capitalized on our backs and on our histories for many decades, and they are not our lies. Indigenous knowledge is a valid way of perceiving the world, but often oppressed by the Western ideal of everything can be explained by science, the rest is superstition and fantasy, which, as many decolonial writers have shown by now, is a limited and destructive way of thinking of knowledge and knowledge production. This dominant way of thinking puts a certain Eurocentric catalogue of knowledge as its center, denouncing the value of indigenous cultures and ultimately erasing them from history, the world, and academia. I do think there are many ways of perceiving the world. There is a polyphony of perception and perspectives, maybe as many as there are cultures and people, and they can be considered all valid. My work thesis draws on concepts developed by Edward Said in his 1978 book Orientalism, Knowledge Production and Legitimation, Non-Performativity and Epistemicide. From a Western European point of view, knowledge is based on reason. This will be obtained through education and an organization and classification of knowledge. Since the Enlightenment, Western society classified everything and anything in a hierarchical way in the name of reason and science. Then, from the 15th to the 18th century, through their expeditions, the West is challenged on the idea it held about itself as the only civilized people of the world. They started producing new knowledge, stolen from the population they discovered, then ideologically transformed through reason to be commodified. Just as any natural resources, human beings became classified hierarchically, along with plants and animals, ranked according to racist ideas such as nearly human, almost human, or subhuman. Linda Tuhiwe Terina Smith, professor of indigenous education at the University of Waikato in Hamilton, New Zealand, puts it like this.
Civilized knowledge, this form of global knowledge, is generally referred to as universal knowledge, available to all and not really owned by anyone, that is, until non-Western scholars make claims to it. When claims like that are made, history is revised, again, so that the story of civilization remains the story of the West. For this purpose, the Mediterranean world, the basin of Arabic culture, and the lands east of Constantinople are conveniently appropriated as part of the story of Western civilization, philosophy, knowledge. Through imperialism, however, these cultures, peoples, and their nation-states were repositioned as Oriental or outsider in order to legitimize the imposition of colonial rule.
From this 17th century imperialism started the imposition of Western authority on lands, modes of production, laws and government, but also knowledge, languages and cultures. As Edward Said advanced, the different alliances between the ideologies, clichés, general beliefs and understandings held about the Orient and the views of science and philosophical theories were a major agency for this colonial education, with the missionary religious schooling, then public secular. They assimilated colonized people while denying indigenous people of their languages, cultures, and traditions. They created new indigenous elites, giving them some taste of privileges, while a majority was deemed uneducable and lower humans.
Most traditional disciplines are grounded in cultural worldviews which are either antagonistic to other belief systems or have no methodology for dealing with other knowledge systems.
Imazighen, in singular Amazigh, are members of an indigenous ethnic group from North Africa. Known in antiquity as Libyans, Imazighen have had different names through history, such as Berbers, Mazis, Moors, Numidians, Getul, Garamantes, and others. They are spread over an area stretching from the Atlantic Ocean to the Siwa Oasis in Egypt, and from the Mediterranean Sea to the Niger River in West Africa. Historically, Himaziren nations spoke the Tamazight languages, which are a branch of the Afro-Asiatic language family. The vast majority of the population of North Africa is of Amazigh origin, although, due to Arabization and colonization, a large part of the population of the Maghreb identifies as Arab. The history of Himaziren has always been recorded from an outside perspective since antiquity, which is probably linked to the orality of Himaziren culture and its delegitimization. Even if it is an oral form, which implies a performance context, French colonial collectors and so-called scientists transformed the oral poetry and tradition of North African indigenous into written Latin text. This deprived them of context, potential authors or actors of the ritual, translated inaccurately to Arabic and then to French. For example, who were and are the women storytellers and poets? What is known about the oral culture that produced this text and were the redacted text elicited from informants in special situations? Slyomovics. Most, nearly all written accounts of these practices are from an outsider's perspective, whether it is from antiquity with Herodotus and Virgil, the Arabic sources during the Middle Ages, or the later colonial reports, mostly focusing on Morocco or Kabylia, country drawing generalities from it. It is important to note that most accounts of Himaziren storytelling were, and sometimes are, still done under the category of conte berber, which is highly reductive considering the diversity of cultures and storytelling modes inside North African territory. Other problematic aspects are the absence of the performance context and, linked to it, the situation of the collection of the stories. They were done on the colonial administration's demand. The scholars were military translators for the colonial forces, and the dominant-dominated relation is totally ignored. Another problematic fact is that those stories were collected exclusively from men. The problematic canon of knowledge is precisely what requires or makes this contribution as valid as a counterform to any dominant narrative.